نحن انضموا للاستماع إلى راديو بلدي، أول راديو عربي أمريكي ويعنى بقضايا العرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعة من 8 حتى 9 صباحا في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK Radio 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Good Morning Michigan. Our call in number 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues.
Good morning and welcome to the Local Connections from US Arab Radio. We thank you for being with us and wish you a wonderful day. The war between Israel and Hamas continues unabated. Efforts to secure the ceasefire have failed, and the situation is dire. With us this morning is Alma Dufour, deputy of the French National Assembly, who has visited Gaza. And good morning, and thank you for being with us, Ms. Dufour.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Sorry for my French accent.
Thank you. When did you visit Gaza?
About 1 month ago. I did not have the right to enter Gaza. Actually, I was blocked at the border at Rafah on the Egyptian side, because the Israeli government doesn't let any parliamentary representative that stand for the ceasefire enter in their territory, which is not really their territory, but in the Gaza Strip. So we were blocked at Rafah's gate in the Sahel desert from the Egyptian side, where we met a lot of humanitarians that could go and cross the borders. They have the right to. So they told us about the really, really dire situation, as you said, in Gaza right now.
Mm-hmm. Did you try to ask the Israelis if you can go in?
Yeah, and I then didn't get the authorization. Actually, we have also a problem. We have a lot. We have some French citizens that are still inside the Gaza Strip, and they want to go out, and Israel does not even give the authorization to go out. So we have the other way around problem is that we are French citizens that are just stuck by Israel decision and that are dying slowly of illness and injuries, and the government of French government doesn't say much.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you. Has the French government asked Israel to allow its citizens to cross? Because it would have to be arranged between the French, the Egyptians, and the Israelis. Otherwise, they cannot cross.
Yeah, no. Actually, they suppose. The French government is telling us they are doing so. They are asking the French citizens to get out of Rafah, but they are not. I don't know how do we say that they do not.
They're not arranging for them. Yeah, they're not arranging.
Yeah, they're not very on. It's not at the top of their priority list. It seems. Excuse me for the expression, but we ask again, and they say, "Oh, we'll see," or maybe we still don't have an answer. And during this time, we have, for example, a French teacher in the university of near my territory, my circumscription of election, that died from diabetes because he couldn't go out of Gaza, and there is no more hospital working enough to treat someone with diabetes in Gaza right now. So situations like that. We have a young child that's named Omar. He's 3 years old. Omar Znaidi, and he has suffered from bombing. He's severely injured, and he could die from the repercussion of the bombing if he's not taken care of in the proper hospital that works with all the equipment and medication and care that we have in our country. And he's going to die, and he's 3 years old, and the government doesn't look very concerned about his fate. Let's say this.
How do you feel that your government is not listening to you and is not arranging for its citizens to be evacuated out of Gaza?
It's very, very painful. It seems like when it concerns the Israeli government action, there is a lot of, how would you say, two sides, two measurements, you know, like they had a very, very, very strong and it's normal reaction for the French hostages of Hamas. And they are still regularly asking for their liberation, which we totally agree with and stand for. But from the other way around, and the, just the French citizens, teachers, medics, or even ONGs, NGOs, sorry, personnel that are blocked in Gaza, they do not speak about. And for example, we have this very strong example. There was a national homage. I don't know how to say homage, like a ceremony for the. For the French Israeli that died on the 7th of October, and it was a huge national ceremony, and they did a very, very little private, non-public ceremony for the French Palestinian that died from the Israeli attacks.
Why do you think that is?
Because French are since Emmanuel Macron is elected, like 6 years ago, there will be an alignment more and more with Netanyahu's government, and more, how do you say,
right wing.
Yeah. I have to start again because my English is not that good.
That's okay.
Like for the people who hear us, we have to set in the to have to take back in time, go back in time. Like for a long, long period, French was really supporting the Palestinian cause and the creation of a two-state solution. It was also the view of General de Gaulle, which was a right-wing president, but which was really, really supporting the Palestinian people's rights to have to their own existence, their own determination, and a state. So that was the historic French position. But after 9/11, actually, and after the election of your president Bush and then our president Nicolas Sarkozy in France, that was right wing too, the position started to switch, and the Palestinian cause ceased to be progressively supported by the subsequent French president, and we end up with Macron, that is a more pro-Israeli president we have never had. He has invited Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, 5 times already in France before the 7th October, and he was not speaking anymore about the Palestinian right to have a state, and it was like a forgotten cause, you know. So there is like more support from the Israeli side and the Palestinian side. It is really clear. And now Macron is starting to say this cannot continue. He's appealing for a ceasefire. That is good. That is the first step. But the French government did not take any measure, economical sanction or arms boycott to Israel that prove that they are really in putting all their efforts to stop this bloody massacre.
Yeah. How do the French, the average person in France, you know, feel about the whole situation in Gaza?
Well, I'm not sure if there is an average person on this subject. There are a lot of youngsters and a lot of persons that are really, 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 really shocked, really, really concerned. Make reborn the trauma of colonization also in French. Sure. And you know, French is a country that colonized. Yeah. A lot of countries, and we have a lot of citizens that come from those colonized countries, and so of course for them it's a huge suffering, and they feel very, very concerned. There is a part of the population that is in the middle side, you know, and there is such a huge media propaganda for Israel in France, in the all big mainstream media, you know, TV media,
sure.
They're really Zionist positioning. So a lot of people just don't know what to think anymore because they have been brainwashed by propaganda for like 4.5 months now. And so they grasp that something bad is happening in Gaza, but they still don't find the strength to condemn really Israel, because I think because the ambience, the media narrative around what happened and what is happening is so distorted, you know.
Sure.
And also I know a lot, and I will not pick their names because it would be unfair, but I know artists, for example, singers or actors, that French actors that don't want to take position, not because they are ignorant of what is happening, because they fear for their career. And we are at this stage now in France, and they have told me so. They have said, I would like to support your protest on tomorrow. We have a big protest in Paris. We hope it would be big. And we ask actors and singers to support us, and they were afraid for their career.
Yeah. Now, when you went to Rafah, how long did you stay there?
5 days. 5 days. Very busy days. We met with a lot of people. And as you may know, to cross the Sinai desert, you have to have the validation from the Egyptian side, like the Egyptian army is a military zone. So we were highly taken care of, I would say, by the French embassy and the Egyptian government. So we stayed 5 days.
Yeah. And what did you see? What did you witness?
I witnessed several things. We spoke with the humanitarians and most notably with medics, also French medics, that was a rare French that have the right to cross the border from the Israeli side.
Mm-hmm.
And they told us that they came back from Rafah, but on the Gaza side, on the Palestinian side. And they were working in the last hospital working in Rafah, the European hospital. And they told us about a situation that is so incredibly horrible to just imagine, that I was like in a shock of state. And they were in shock. Like the medics that came by were in shock. Even the head of the delegation, that specialty was war medicine, you know, so heavily injured people. And he was like in shock, in state of shock, and saying, I couldn't bear it anymore. Like, because the hospital has become a city in itself, because there are 1.5 million people that are forced to be gathered in Rafah. That is a city that can only allow 200,000 people. You know, you see the difference. It's huge. So people are sleeping in the hospital, sleeping in tents. They do not have food anymore, not water anymore. Women from Gaza are shaving their heads because there is not enough water to just wash their hair, and they don't want to get disease and infection, and the children are starving, and the parents just stop taking food to give their ration to their children. You know, that is how bad the situation is. They are forced to take choices, like do we give morphine to a child that got a bullet in his shoulder, or to a child that got his leg stripped over by a bombing, you know.
And the
adults do not get any morphine anymore, you know. And so that's what we learn. We learn also that the humanitarian are voluntarily targeted by the Israeli army. They said that their warehouse from humanitarian aid on the other side, on Gaza side, were bombed several times. So they are bombing the warehouses that is receiving the aid from the international countries to go to the Rafah population, the Gaza population. They also told us that the aid is so insufficient that it only covers 5% of the needs of the Gaza population. And in those 5%, Israel is still blocking some of the aid that is trying to enter, because they pretend that it could be an help for Hamas and stuff like that. But I've seen what they rejected at the border. There was oxygen bottles, clean water kits, urgent medical aid kit sent by France, actually, that were blocked in the Egyptian side. And we saw line and line and line and line and line and line of trucks, of food trucks, that are waiting to enter, and they cannot enter. So it's really, really, really frustrating to see that. And the humanitarian that just giving their life to help Gaza population because they know they could get killed in doing so. And I can just finish with this example. We met with the Red Crescent, like the Red Cross. The Red Crescent that told us that two medic car ambulance were lost because they were searching for a little girl that parents were murdered, and the little girl was the only survivor of a car shot of a car shooting, and it was in Rajab, and we didn't know at the time, and they said our colleagues have disappeared for 4 days searching for the little girl, and we don't know what happened to them. We fear that might be dead. And yeah, we got back in France, and we heard that in Rajab, the little girl and the colleagues and the Red Crescent colleagues were dead.
Yeah. What we're going to do is we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Yeah.
Get ready for an amazing experience at Ishtar Restaurant on 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights. Enjoy excellent hospitality from owners Ali Abbaghdadi and Fatty Bottom, serving the best in Mediterranean food. Try Chef Ali Abbaghdadi's famous shawarma, the best Iraqi grills and food, and the best Arabic and international dishes. Dine in our authentic atmosphere or take out. Call 586-698-2585 or check us out on Facebook. Ishtar Restaurant practices all CDC guidelines and is open every day 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Have an amazing experience today at Ishtar Restaurant, 3625 15 Mile Road, Sterling Heights. Life for Relief and Development has now been rated as one of the best charities for humanitarian aid. Life's humanitarian projects span the globe, and Life is celebrating its 30th anniversary of providing essential life-saving aid to people and communities in 36 countries, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. Where there is life, there is hope. And when disaster occurs here or around the world, including being one of the first responders to the Turkey-Syria earthquake crisis, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. We are looking to help the earthquake victims, and we take 0% overhead on emergency donations. So please help improve these efforts. Learn more about our involvement to help the helpless and bring hope where it's needed most, and make your tax-deductible donation to Life for Relief and Development now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493. That's 248-424-7493. ArabNews.com, bringing you breaking news from across the Middle East and the latest on Arabs in America. Get inside the latest headlines with expert analysis and insights at ArabNews.com. Join over 5 million Facebook fans and over 10 million monthly readers. ArabNews.com, news that matters to you. At Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic in Dearborn, we provide effective physical therapy sessions in order to limit pain and discomfort. Top Rehab provides physical therapy care for any diagnosis prescribed by a physician, and we regularly see and treat conditions such as stroke, TMJ, fibromyalgia, sciatica, joint pain, and more. We use a variety of pain management methods, including modalities, soft tissue mobilization, and therapeutic exercise. If you're in need of physical rehabilitation or physical therapy, get the highest quality health care at Top Rehab. Most insurance is accepted, and we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 8 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday 8 to 5, and Saturday 10 till 2. Call for an appointment today at 313-846-0555. That's 313-846-0555. Choose Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Life's too short to be in pain.
Welcome back, and thank you for being with us. We're talking with Alma Defour. She's deputy of the French National Assembly who has visited Gaza recently. You know, I mean, the French, the champions of freedom, human rights, and all of that, and then they turned their face the other way, and it's just mind-boggling. I mean, it's just, I mean, I know England does that, but England is the source of all problems in the world, you know, nations and all of that. But, you know, I had more faith in the French that they would, at least on the humanitarian aspect, that they would do more. And unfortunately, I don't see that. You know, what is the France doing on the humanitarian aspect?
Not much, and you're right. They're sending a bit of head. They have a The Macron did a huge, President Macron did a huge publicity on a medical boat that would go to Gaza in the sea, but it was only four. It could take care of four really badly injured people, so it was nothing. And they said, "Oh, look at us! We're humanitarian government. We are helping people." And this was the boat they sent for four badly injured people, so it was nothing. And now they're starting to send more food and pills and other medical treatment stuff needed, but it's really highly insufficient. They did not want to raise the money we give to UNRWA. We ask in November, because I'm part of the finance commission at the parliament, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. on the budget. So we asked La France Insoumise, my political movement, ask for a raise in the money we give to UNRWA, that is taking care of the medical and the humanitarian aid in Gaza, and they refused. And there is this huge distortion. They really are increasing the aid we are giving to Ukraine. To survive to the Russia invasion and to fight back, but they are not at all increasing the humanitarian aid for Gaza. So you're right, they're doing not much.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And we are trying to understand why is that. I mean, there is two problems, I guess. There is an internal problem. From my point of view, the internal problem is, as I said, there are a lot of high power person in the media, notably, that are very Zionist aligned. So if you want to be popular and not to be charged with anti-Semitic accusations, it's mm-hmm. like that in France. I myself could have been treated, labeled as an anti-Semitic person. And it's like they do that with every person that is supporting Gaza. Right now in France. And I even tried to do it with Macron the first time he spoke about the ceasefire. And it was really intense. So there is an internal fight, cultural and political fight in France. And if you want to not to be, labeled. Charged with labels and charged, you have to better to not open your mouth or act too much for Gaza. So that's the first thing. And I think it counts a lot because Emmanuel Macron is a president that do a lot for communication. You know, he governed and he got reelected by really heavy support for this media, actually, these big medias. So that's one thing. The other thing I think is, I don't know what, because your country, United States, is still the one that is still really blockading any shift of the situation at the international level by putting vetoes at the Security Council of the NATO. I don't know what are the discussion between Biden and Macron on this subject. And sure. I don't know if the United States could put pressure on France and European countries to not act too much and to mm-hmm. not... put economical sanction, for example. I don't know, because as a French parliamentarian, we are not informed of the details of the diplomatic action of our president. It is like something that is of the president competency. You know, I'm not sure it's the same thing in the United States, but in France, the parliament is quite...
it's a little bit different here. Yeah. And President Biden yesterday said he plans to construct a temporary port in Gaza to bring in the aid into Gaza. And, you know, that's going to take a few weeks, but still it's better than not doing anything. And I hope that, you know, the French would join there and bring in. This way they have no excuse not to send in aid.
Yeah, sure. No, I think they will join, but what is unfortunate is that so many people will be already dead, you know, because 300,000 deaths is a numbers given by the Hamas, but actually all the military experts said there is far more death actually from hunger, from illness, from lack of water. And I fear that the population in Rafah cannot wait for 3 weeks more to get this aid. So maybe it would be less. I don't know what delay Biden has announced, but yes, France has to do more. But also it's not even on the humanitarian aspect, but more we have to stop this politically, because there is no anything left in Gaza. Like they bombed, they destroyed about sure. half of the buildings of the Gaza Strip. There sure. is no more water infrastructure, electricity infrastructure. Like nobody can live in Gaza anymore. So we have to have a plan, an international plan, you see, for the creation of a Palestinian state and a huge effort to reconstruct the Gaza Strip. And it was... humanitarian aid will not suffice. The people will still die if we do not obtain this ceasefire permanently and reconstruction.
Thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and we thank you for all you do on the humanitarian side to reach for the Gazans and trying to help them as much as possible.
Thank you so much. Sorry for my bad English.
That's okay. You did very well. Thank you so much. We appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Puck, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products, because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
Are you going to start a restaurant or grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Naji Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Naji Abood now, 734-744-9796. New Concept Products and Design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New Concept Products and Design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Naji Abood, 734-744-9796.
ArabNews.com, bringing you breaking news from across the Middle East and the latest on Arabs in America. Get inside the latest headlines with expert analysis and insights at ArabNews.com. Join over 5 million Facebook fans and over 10 million monthly readers. ArabNews.com, news that matters to you.
Welcome back, and thank you for being with us. This is Khalil Hashim, editor of Michigan.com with the US Arab Radio. The war in the Middle East has been escalating beyond the borders of Israel since October 7, with the fear that it would explode the entire Middle East. One of these areas is Lebanon, and in particular is southern Lebanon, where a mini war has been taking place. With us this morning is Michel Helou. He's a Secretary General of the Lebanese National Bloc. Good morning, Michel. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Mr. Hashim, for having me on air. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Could you tell us a little bit about you, and then also what is the Lebanese National Bloc?
Sure. So I am currently the Secretary General of this party. I got elected in 2022, but more than a year ago, to this position. We are a national, secular, democratic party in Lebanon, and this is something very, very rare. Now, to come back to where I come from and how I decided to join this very quickly, basically, I was born in Switzerland, in Geneva, Switzerland, 1989. I grew up there, like so many Lebanese who are actually immigrants. You know, my parents left the country at the beginning of the Civil War. My dad went to the US, my mom went to France, and they grew up in Switzerland. then moved to France, then moved to Dubai, like a lot of Lebanese. I decided to come back in 2015 to run the oldest newspaper running in Lebanon, which is L'Orient Le Jour, French and English-speaking newspaper. So I was the publisher of L'Orient Le Jour for 6 years. And then after the port blast, after August 4, 2020, I decided that journalism was good, but it was not enough to change the country. Hence, I decided to quit my job and run for elections. This is when I set up a campaign in Babda, which is my hometown. Although I came to Babda when I was only 25, but still it's a place where, that I'm very close to, and ran. And I ran through the National Bloc. I joined at that moment this party that I was close to in the ideas, and which is actually a party, the National Bloc, a party that is at the same time very old and very young. It's a party that was founded at the time of Emile Hidde, so still at the time of the French mandate in the 90s, 20s, sure, and 30s, sure. But then kind of disappeared from the political scene during the Civil War because it's the only party that decided not to take arms against its fellow Lebanese. It's the only party that did not turn into a militia. We decided with a group of people to launch it, to relaunch it, reactivate it in 2018 with Carlos Hidde, among them, who was the nephew of Raymond Hidde, the historic leader, and a lot of other people, mostly young people, secular people, people that really believe in protecting the state and building the state of Lebanon and economic and political reform. So this was really our platform, and secular people that believe that we should be considered as citizens and not just as members of a specific community. That has been our work. So during the campaign, the 2022 electoral campaign, which we built also on the wave of this revolution, the uprising that happened in 2019. So we were all in the streets for a month, and we tried to push for change as much as possible. And we kept going during elections. We got 12,000 votes in total, and which makes us one of the biggest structures in the change movement. And I got close to 6,000 votes in Babda, in my constituency. And since then, I kept going. So I got elected as secretary general a year and a half ago. And now we're working day in, day out to recruit young people, develop our platform, and be ready to reclaim our country, even though we know it's going to take time, but we're extremely committed and persistent.
Absolutely. Do you have any members in the parliament right now?
So we don't have members in parliament. Most of us were young candidates. We were five candidates. Three of us were very close to winning. I actually beat two current members of parliament who won, although they had very low number of votes, because that's because of how the law is made. It was designed to support bigger parties and not independent candidates like ours. So, but still, we know now how we've got strong, better experience now. We're going to use it to win next time. And also, currently in parliament, there are 12 MPs, which we call the change MPs, that are very close to us, which we support. And there's other MPs also with whom we work. So we cooperate a lot with current members of parliament.
That's good. Before we talk about what's going on in the South, there are two things that are very important. And you alluded to one of them, which is the electoral system in Lebanon. The election system is really terrible. And, that does not afford people like you who want to make a change to really make it on the scene. What's going to take to change that?
I think that the biggest problem actually is even worse than that. It's the fact that there's no certainty about our democracy. There's nothing fixed, in the sense that when those parties, this mafia that has been, the mafia and militia that have been governing the country for the last 30 years, when those guys get to power, then they are allowed, or they enable themselves to cancel elections or to postpone elections as much as they want. And this is the biggest threat on our electoral system. On top of that, and this is what has been going on with the local municipal elections for the last 3 years. It's the third time now that they're currently postponing municipal elections, although we really, really need them. So we're going to need to fight a lot to make sure that the next elections will happen in 2026. So the first thing that we need to do to change that is to lobby massively inside Lebanon and outside Lebanon to make sure that we will have parliamentary elections in 2026. So there's a lot of lobbying, there's a lot of pressuring, there's a lot of working with observers. You know, they send like the EU, European Union, and other members of the international community. They send people that come that observe elections, that make sure that the elections are transparent, etc. We need massive pressure for that. And you know, because it's not just the fact that there's no proper democracy because they can cancel elections. Also, the fact that they buy votes massively, that they distribute services all year round. So you come here and you compete with people that have budgets that are 10 times or 100 times bigger than yours. They can threaten you. They have weapons like Hezbollah, etc. So all of that obviously makes the system much, much more difficult. We need to fight, you know, battle after battle, step by step. First, make sure that elections happen, then pressure as much as possible so we get governance of elections. For that, we need support from EU and international observers. What we also need for that is mega centers. So mega center will be a huge battle. Mega centers actually means that instead of forcing everyone to go back to their hometown to vote, we allow them to vote where they live.
And this is where they live. One man, one vote. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So this is a battle that we're going to be fighting. Also because it prevents them from controlling voters. The thing is, when you have small, isolated voting, you know, ballots or voting offices, then it allows the local parties to, they have their local mafia, et cetera, allows them to control how voters vote and to pressure them. Well, if you gather a bigger number of voters in a more anonymous way, then it prevents them to control the votes, and this will massively change the results. The third thing, also critical, is the diaspora votes. And here I'm talking to the people of Michigan and you know, all the Lebanese in the US. We will need a massive support from you guys. You pressure our embassies and consulates to make sure that you preserve your rights in terms of voting, because the biggest risk that we're going to be facing is that in the law that they passed in 2017, what they're doing is that they are carving out 6 seats that are only for the diaspora. But what that means is that the diaspora is only represented by 6 seats out of 134, which is not much. Mm-hmm. Although in this law that they're trying to implement, although in the reality, the way the diaspora voted last time was that they probably are worth 10 to 15 seats out of 128. And if there's more people who register, and I'm sure that we can get many more people to register, in that case, the expats can, you know, weigh or can influence at least 20 or 25 seats in parliament. So we need to fight massively all together to make sure that...
Why do we need to... I mean, I live in Michigan. I'm an American citizen. I don't live in Lebanon. Why do I need to get involved in what's going on in Lebanon as far as representation? I mean, this is a representation for the Lebanese in their government. I'm only a visitor to Lebanon, even though I was born in Lebanon. But, you know, on the other hand is that basically representation is for the people who are in Lebanon. I mean, why do people outside Lebanon should have a say in what's going on in the country?
Khalil, you and I have the opposite trajectory. You were born in Lebanon and you left and you went to the US. I was born abroad because my parents had left 50 years ago and I decided to come back. I believe that both of us are very attached to Lebanon, even though both of us have a diverse identity. All of us have a variety of maybe citizenships and lived maybe several places across the world, and we speak several languages, etc. But the reality is that I believe that Lebanon has a very important value. Lebanon has a moral, an ethnical, a cultural, a political, philosophical value for the Lebanese in Lebanon, for the Lebanese abroad, and for all the people, because Lebanon means a lot, not just because I think that we as people, we need as you know, as human beings, we need a place where we belong to. We need a place where, you know, that feels like home.
And also, I get that. I really get that.
Also, because Lebanon is, you know, has something very specific, this ability to the fact that on a, such a small piece of land, there is first that much diversity in term, from a geographic natural perspective, which is, you know, makes it an incredible country, but also this diversity in terms of people and ethnicities and religions. And this is a laboratory of what could work and also what is currently failing in the world. So we have a role that is not just limited to Lebanon. We have a much larger role to show and to play. And there's been a lot of emigration in Lebanon for the last 200 years, close to 200 years, 150 years. Among them, people like Gibran Khalil Gibran, who were in the United States, and others. And a lot of people from, fought from abroad, and they were able to reclaim their country from abroad. What I'm saying is that if we don't fight for our country, we might lose it completely.
So I really appreciate that, and I think you represent the sentiment of a lot of Lebanese when you speak as an independent. At the same time, you know, election is about representation.
One more word on this: when you vote in Lebanon, you don't vote just to, you know, to have a say in the small local matters such as water and electricity and stuff that are actually essential. But still, you vote to say, look, I'm part of this country and I don't want to lose this country. And even if I've been abroad for a while, I'm still very connected to this country. And maybe I'm not going to come back. Maybe I'm going to come back one day to Lebanon and live there. But at least I want my kids to know that, you know, this is also their country and that they should be proud of their country and that they're allowed to come back and to know more about this culture. And I think that our generation has a massive responsibility to make sure that we don't lose what's left of our country, because we might lose it completely. And I can tell you something.
Yeah, to be said,
all going to regret it. We're all going to regret it if we don't fight for our country properly.
Yeah. And there's no doubt Lebanon is one of the most beautiful countries in the world. You know, there's really no doubt about that. And it's really sad to see the economic situation there. What can be done? I mean, right, Lebanon used to have a very strong banking system. And now, that's terrible what's going on there. What can be done?
There is a deep economic financial reform that needs to be done. But to start with the most important, it's not so much an economic and technical problem, but rather much more a political problem. What you need is political will, people that are ready to make tough decisions, to take on this sort of political financial mafia that has been running the banking system and funding the state and funding politicians and corruption for decades. Take on this, face it properly, and do full-fledged reform that are needed. Now, in terms of reform package, it's obviously full-fledged indeed, but it's something that we've seen in other countries, but obviously with a bigger scale in Lebanon, because the whole system collapsed. So there is, at the same time, there's a public debt crisis, there's a balance of payment crisis deficit, there is a currency crisis, and there is a banking sector crisis. All these four elements and sectors have collapsed, and we need to work on all these four. So both on the public sector, on the private sector, and the banking sector, currency-wise, and you know, so central bank-wise as well. Absolutely. All of these need to be reformed. And the only way they can be properly reformed is by applying also the IMF program that has been suggested for Lebanon, and in order also to have the IMF support that we need to get out of this crisis.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
With more than 30,000 successful in vitro fertilizations, IVF Michigan is now ranked as one of America's best fertility clinics, according to Newsweek magazine. IVF Michigan fertility centers are the recognized leaders in high-quality fertility care. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and 9 other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. A founding member, American Board Certified Dr. Nicholas Shama, is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. He has performed over 20,000 successful IVF cases and it's helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. When it's time to get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at one of America's best fertility clinics, call IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio toll-free at 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600.
At Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic in Dearborn, we provide effective physical therapy sessions in order to limit pain and discomfort. Top Rehab provides physical therapy care for any diagnosis prescribed by a physician, and we regularly see and treat conditions such as stroke, TMJ, fibromyalgia, sciatica, joint pain, and more. We use a variety of pain management methods, including modalities, soft tissue mobilization, and therapeutic exercise. If you're in need of physical rehabilitation or physical therapy, get the highest quality health care at Top Rehab. Most insurance is accepted, and we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 8 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday 8 to 5, and Saturday 10 till 2. Call for an appointment today at 313-846-0555. That's 313-846-0555. Choose Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Life's too short to be in pain.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad. Quality products from our family to yours.
When you're looking for the best in optical care, Dr. Imad Nakash is your doctor to see. With years of experience and thousands of successful procedures performed, you can trust your eyes to Dr. Imad Nakash. See Dr. Imad Nakash and his professional staff for your eye care needs. There's two locations to serve you. In Hazel Park, call 248-336-3937. 248-336-3937. In Rochester Hills, call 248-299-3937. That's 248-299-3937.
Welcome back, and thank you for being with us. We're talking to Michelle Hello from Lebanon. We're talking about the condition in Lebanon. And, you know, right now, the condition in the South is really terrible. And you live in Lebanon. What's the update there?
So the update is bad. It's tough. Last night, three civilians were killed, among them, I think, a teenager was killed by Israeli strikes. So the situation is extremely difficult. We know it has been more than close to 300 people that were killed, 300 Lebanese in total that were killed. We're talking about more than 6 million square meters of rural lands, a lot of them agricultural lands that have been burnt completely by bombing with, you know, phosphorus ammunition and missiles. So it's the situation is extremely difficult. There's close to 100,000 people that have been forced to leave their houses from south of Lebanon to other regions. And I think it's disastrous, really. And we're talking about several billions of dollars of damages done to the Lebanese economy. So in the end, it's not just the South that has been affected, but of the whole country that has been affected. And it's also a massive immigration, general immigration that has hit us. And I come here to the biggest problem in my mind, which is the demographic issue. We're seeing a massive brain drain of specifically of young people. And this is an absolute disaster for us. So now the situation is what is that we're facing this absolute, dramatic fanaticism from the Israeli government that is waging a massive war on Gaza and on Lebanon. And this is absolutely dramatic. And we need to face, you know, this extremism, but we need to face it intelligently, and we need to face it with our state. What we are asking for is that the state, the Lebanese army, and the diplomacy reclaim the initiative and reclaim their prerogative. They go and they need to be deployed in the South, because we need to not let South Lebanon become a platform for the war between Israel and Iran. And what the Iranian axis is trying to do, especially through Hezbollah, is very problematic, because, you know, they have been the one who have opened the southern front, and in the end that have also opened hostilities with Israel. And, you know, Israel, the current government, is an extreme right fanatic government. They have absolutely no limits, no boundaries in the way they fight. and they started bombing and destroying Lebanon. So the thing is, I think we need to be very careful and not believe that because we've been launching a couple of rockets on Israel, that means that we are winning, etc. No, the reality is that Israel is probably losing because they're headed for a disaster in the way they're being governed now. But we, as Lebanese, we're being losing all the way. We've been losing a military. We've been losing so many lives. And I think every single life of a Lebanese person, be it in the south or elsewhere, is essential. And we've been losing economically as well. So what we need now is very simple. It is a ceasefire, a complete ceasefire, unrelated to what's going on in Gaza. We need to support the Palestinian
people. So you think that Hezbollah fired on Israel because of Iran, or they fired on Israel because of their solidarity with Gaza?
Because of Iran. I think this is extremely clear.
Iran told them to fire on Israel?
Absolutely. This is how Hezbollah...
Traditionally, though, Iran does not really get involved in the Hezbollah decision. I mean, that's independent. Yes, they get help from Iran, but Iran does not impose its decision on anybody in the area, Hamas or anybody in the area.
I think this is something very strategic. You know, what's been going on here is pretty huge, and we've listened from the very beginning, this unity of France theory that has been theorized by Hassan Nasrallah for a while and by Hezbollah for a while, and by the Iranians also for a while. So this is not something small, what has been going on. So when you talk about unity fronts, it really means that, you know, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Al-Quds forces, the IRGC and the Houthis in Yemen are all, you know, coordinating and fighting together. So the problem here is basically first the decision, you know, who holds the decision of should we fight or should we not fight? Is it the Lebanese government or is it not? And I think it's absolutely essential that the Lebanese government has the decision here.
On a good day, yes. But as you well know, absolutely. I mean, you live in Lebanon. Everybody in Lebanon takes order from somebody from the outside. So, you know,
Hezbollah. And I think we need to stop that.
Yeah, Hezbollah is no different. Don't you think you would lend more credibility for your movement if you approach it from a collective, like it's time for us to be all Lebanese instead of taking orders from the outside, instead of singular?
This is exactly our approach. We have a lot of members that come from the south, from all those villages that are being bombed now. Sure. And a lot of our members even have, you know, sometimes in their family, they have Hezbollah members as well.
Yeah.
But our message is very clear, is we as Lebanese people, you know, we need, after all those years, those decades and those centuries of depending on foreign powers, be it in 1860 or in 1958 or during the French Mandate or the Syrian occupation or the Israeli occupation, we need to only depend on ourselves, in the sense that we need to at least be sovereign in our decision making. Do we want war? If we want war, ahla wa sahla, but let it be the Lebanese government officially elected parliament that decides whether we want to go to war or not, but not... another party. This is absolutely essential that we stop being, you know, dependent on foreign powers, at least in our crucial decisions.
Historically, Israel has had territorial ambitions in Lebanon, specifically southern Lebanon. How do you defend that?
So we need to be extremely, extremely firm and clear and strong in the face of Israel and the face of all any country that might want to invade or have any territorial ambition on Lebanon, be it Israel, be it Syria, like they've done for 30 years.
How do you defend southern Lebanon from Israel?
We need to rearm the Lebanese army, to redeploy it, and we have enough members, we have enough trained members, and there are also several thousands of UNIFIL members that are in the south. And if you combine...
Israel doesn't care about all of that. I mean, the main issue is that Israelis traditionally, even before Israel became a state, they've had territorial ambitions. You know, the first guy to fight them was Patriarch Huwayyik. And then the Lebanese unity refused, even before the independence, as you well know, they refused to secede southern Lebanon. and then they wanted to protect it, and they continue to do that, you know. Absolutely. But now, you know, I mean, Lebanese armies wasn't even strong enough to fight the small group in the north not long ago.
Khalil,
it's going to take a lot of work.
The national bloc was part of the delegation that drew the borders of Lebanon, including, yeah, you know, all borders of Lebanon. In our political tradition and ideology, especially with someone like Raymond Edde, we've been extremely clear on our opposition to Israel and to the policies that Israel led, especially since the Nakba and then 1967 war and all the wars that have been leading, and the way they've been, you know, colonizing and displacing the Palestinians. So this is a cause that is extremely important for us.
Sure.
Now, the Lebanese army during 1949 and 1978 was able to defend the south, and there was no Israeli presence for those decades.
78?
Until 78, when they came into Lebanon, when they started invading Lebanon. And then
actually in 78, they were occupying southern Lebanon, yeah.
They occupied starting 78,
yeah,
and they left in 2000. And since the day they left...
The reason they left is because of the people fighting them, not because
absolutely.
Of...
Absolutely, and we defended also the right to resist, and I personally defended the right to resist. And when they left in 2000, I went to the border, and we were the first ones to support this. But since then, and especially since 2006, and the end of the war, there's been a international resolution which we asked for, we as Lebanon, 1701, that says we want a ceasefire on both sides, you know, to stop the hostilities, and we want to deploy the UNIFIL and the Lebanese army, and we ask for the Israelis to stop doing what they're doing. And from 2006 till October 8th last year, there's been nearly nothing, not a single shot that was fired. So this is what we need to keep and to protect. Absolutely. And I don't think that the Israelis today, even though they're fanatic, I don't think they want to occupy Lebanon. I think this is done. And what we need to do is fight at the same time.
If they get a chance, they'll do it tomorrow.
What we need to do is to support the Palestinian cause very strongly and to say this is the right. And without a Palestinian state, there will be no peace in the region. And we need this because we need equality and justice. And at the same time, we need to support Lebanon's territorial sovereignty and integrity through our state. And I think this is what will make us a modern country, a modern state.
We're running out of time. Final thoughts.
Well, first, I want to thank you a lot for having me. I think that what matters is that we not forget our country, where we come from, the importance of that country for us and for all the people that are interested in the Middle East, for all the people that want to see this country as a beacon for freedom in the region, as a beacon for coexistence in the region. I think this is absolutely essential, because coexistence and freedom will be, and democracy will be at stake and at risk in the years to come, not only in our region, but everywhere across the world. And it is our role to show that actually there are models of coexistence that do work, and proper, solid democracies that can be built in the Middle East specifically. So we do need everyone in this battle, and we need specifically the Lebanese, the people of Michigan, and all the Lebanese to, you know, be part of this constant struggle of let's not let our country down, because it means a lot to so many people and to us.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So we need to fight for it. And I'm convinced that we have so much potential. When I see all the Lebanese in Lebanon and abroad specifically, you know, the amount of human capital that is present among this diaspora, I know that one day we will succeed. So we need to fight this fight. And this is the fight of our generation.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Khalil.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank Alma Dufour for being with us from France, and Michelle Helloum from Lebanon. The situation in Gaza continues to be fluid, and it continues to be very sad. We hope that we reach a ceasefire soon and the whole situation changes. You have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, Mike, for a great production. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You have a wonderful weekend. Bye now.